Hello, and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show are two brothers, twins actually, who star in the Netflix documentary series Shot in the Dark. Austin and Howard Raishbrook are what we call stringers in the news business. They work at night, listening to police scanners, and film crime scenes, fires, accidents. Those things which in turn they sell to news outlets in Los Angeles to air. The show follows their company, RMG News, and two other rival companies in the eight-part series. If you've ever seen the movie Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal, it's kind of like that, only not as darkly twisted and corrupt as Jake Gyllenhaal's character, I would say. Still, it's a job that's dangerous, and for the average viewer of the show, probably something that you'll walk away from with maybe more questions, which is what I had. So lucky for me, I got a chance to sit down with two-thirds of the RMG News brothers, Austin and Howard, to talk to them all about the show, the moral implications of a job like that, you know, showing up to tragic moments in people's lives with a camera, and even what they thought about the movie Nightcrawler, which, might I add, Jake Gyllenhaal did a ride-along with them when he was preparing for the movie. I really enjoyed meeting them, and I think if you watch the show, you'll appreciate hearing their perspective about some of these things, about what they do in the entire business of being a stringer. So, enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
When do you guys sleep?
We really don't. We've been doing it for such a long time that I think it's given us a good preparation for having kids. But with kids and a nighttime schedule, we get naps when we can. Go to bed at 4 o'clock, wake up at 8 when the kids are awake.
4 p.m. Oh, 4 a.m.
4 a.m., yeah.
Wake up, 8 a.m.
Yeah, so go to bed at 4. We shoot until 3:30, 4 o'clock. Go and sleep at 4, wake up at 8 a.m., and then
try and get power naps throughout the day.
Yeah, sleep when my kid sleeps. He does a power nap about 2 o'clock for an hour. I do that and then go back out at 10 o'clock.
Wow. And you said, Howard, you have a 2-year-old, and Austin, you have a
5-year-old and 1.5-year-old, yeah.
Wow. So does Mark, your other brother, does he have kids?
No.
Oh. That's so fun, though, that their cousins live near each other at least and they can hang out, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah,
exactly.
Does Mark live around in L.A. somewhere?
Sierra
close
Madre,
here?
Okay. Other side of Pasadena.
Gotcha. Okay. I may have told you this on the phone. You went to uni at University of Birmingham.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you told me.
Where are you guys from originally? What part of town?
We were born in London, but we grew up near Stonehenge. North Dorset, a place called Gillingham in North Dorset.
It's along the south coast.
Yeah.
Kind of by Bristol? Is that close to Bristol?
That sort of direction, yeah. It's about a 45-minute drive from Bristol.
So did you guys go to school trips, like in grade school, to learn about Stonehenge and like try and figure out, why is this here? What did they do? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and all that, and then finding fossils on the beach and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, going to farms and shaving sheep and all that sort of stuff.
Bit different
from
now.
So much fun. Do you guys have a lot of family there still?
Yeah, our parents are still there, and yeah, I mean, it's just the three of us, Austin, Mark, and myself over here, so kind of feel sorry for my parents, especially my mom.
Yeah.
Especially watching the show like Shot in the Dark. They're like, please tell us that's not real. It's like, yeah, we act the whole thing.
Yeah. did they have a general idea, do you think, of what you guys do, of your company and everything, or did they learn a lot since watching the show?
They've had a general idea. We've had magazine articles done on us. We had a show back in 2008, 2009. So they know what we do. And then we just have to choose what we tell them and what we don't tell them.
Mm. Like they watched Nightcrawler and they're like, please tell us you don't drag bodies around and stuff like that. It's not quite that bad.
You're like, that's me. I'm Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, he's a sociopath, but no. Yeah.
I like how you mentioned, I think you mentioned the show, but I also read it on your website that you used to be into Cops and other shows like that.
Yeah. We grew up watching Cops in the UK. I mean, that's the thing to watch. And, you know, World's Wildest Police Chases. And you got to understand, we're from the country in the UK. And when you get to a teenager, it's like, okay, well, you know, what are we going to do for excitement? So every time we heard sirens, we ride off on our BMX bikes and chase the fire trucks and just to see what was going on. Most of the time it was nothing, but it was just, you know, it piqued our interest. And then we started getting into film and broadcasting, et cetera, and photography. And we thought, you know, let's see where can we combine the crime, the cops aspect with the opportunities in media. So we thought, why not give Los Angeles a go?
Was stringer a term that you knew of then?
Not really. It took us a while. It took us a few years to kind of get into the industry over here. Not back in England. We didn't know what a stringer was.
Yeah.
We didn't even know that industry existed.
But you both moved. Did you move to LA at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah. 1995, right after school. We finished our A-levels, we call them over there. And
yes, A-levels.
We saved up a bit of money and came out for 6 months. Lived in Venice, which was an eye-opener.
Eye-opening, yeah.
How so?
Well, just growing up in the middle of nowhere, going to a place where you find hypodermic needles on the floor, and it was just something else.
Yeah.
Something.
Were you shooting a lot of video already? And I mean, just sounds like you already had known how to shoot and edit and whatnot when you got here.
We shot a little bit of stuff. I had a professional camera, and Austin had professional gear as well, and we'd shoot just for the fun of it. So we kind of had an idea how to use cameras and photographic equipment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, we knew how to use the equipment, and we used to shoot anything we'd see, whether it was a guy in handcuffs on the beach or a burning car or whatever, just for the thrill of that. And we shot probably for 5 years and didn't make any money doing it. Just
what did you do with the video?
Just took it home, showed our friends, rewatched it, just the whole, it was like just the thrill of the chase, getting the video was what kept us going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, Mark hadn't come out to the US yet. So he was a few years after us. So we'd go home at Christmas and we'd show him. And I think that really made him kind of.
No, I think it was Baywatch that made him come out.
Baywatch, yeah.
We know all of the crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how much younger is Mark? He's younger than you guys,
he's
right?
He's 5 years younger.
Five. Yeah. Okay. Whose idea was it to start RMG?
I think it was, I mean, we both had a passion for it, and we would hang out together in South Central, and we just decided, well, we see other stringers down here doing what we're doing, and they're obviously making money doing it. Let's try and join in and do it.
First of all, for people, I don't know if I work in news, so I already know what a stringer is. I'm aware of it, aware of the job even before Nightcrawler. In general, people who maybe don't know at all, I'm wondering, can you just talk about a typical night for you guys on your job?
Okay, so we head out when it gets dark, when the traffic dies down, which is almost never, but we kind of head out between 9 and 10 in the evening. And what we used to do is we'd go to certain areas and we'd have one car, we'd sit together, one of us would navigate, one of us would, one of us would drive to the incidents and jump out and shoot. But now we strategically place ourselves in different parts of town. So I might go to South LA, I might go to the Valley, Mark will take East San Gabriel Valley, somewhere like that. And then we just sit in these parking lots next to freeways waiting for stuff to happen.
That was one of my questions, is how much time do you spend just sitting in the car in an empty parking lot?
Not a lot, to be honest. I mean, LA is just a large city and so much stuff happens. You might find yourself there for 20 minutes, maybe 45 minutes, and then you're on to the next thing. It never ends.
Yeah.
Sometimes you won't even get to the parking lot, and you literally just let your scanners lead you around the county.
Yeah, that's another thing that struck me about Shot in the Dark is how well you guys know how to get around, right? I mean, you couldn't do this job.
No,
you would need a navigator at first.
You'd need that. You've got to be very street smart doing what we do. You've got to know where you can, where you can't go, where the best place to park is, know the back accesses and things like that, even down to where you park when you get to these incidents. It's like, don't park too close to a fire because the fire trucks are going to roll up behind you, roll their hoses across, and you're going to get stuck, things like that. So, yeah, you've got to know your way around.
Oh my gosh.
It's a huge difference from, 10, 15 years ago when we were leafing through Thomas Guides trying to find street addresses.
Do you remember we had the little dots to mark the fire stations and all that?
Yeah, we printed it out. We actually took a page of the Thomas Guide and we laminated it and we put these stickers on.
We drew on the LAPD districts. I've still got that.
Yeah,
it's such back in the days of shooting Betacam and all this. Yeah,
old school. Old school stringer life.
Yeah.
That's awesome. If you had to describe an ideal person to do this job, I couldn't do it 100% because first of all, you guys are, I don't know my way around anywhere. So first of all, that would be terrible. But if you could describe an ideal person to do what you guys do, what would they be like?
They would probably have to be single.
A loner. Yeah, maybe. It's not a very, you know, family friendly, you know.
Well, it's not a relationship friendly business at all. A lot of times people are single, energetic, they have to hustle.
Younger than we are.
Yeah. It just gets exhausting after a while. So they've got to have a lot of energy.
You've got to be able to see things and be able to deal with it. So you can't be squeamish, but you've got to be able to keep a level head as well. So you can't be mad.
Gotcha.
Somebody younger that's, you know, willing to get in the middle of things, enjoy the chase, get the adrenaline. You know, some people go out and bungee jump to get their adrenaline rush, but we just sit in the middle of South LA.
Yeah, it's interesting because in the show specifically, I'm from a production standpoint, I'm wondering if you already had, because Howard, you're an executive producer on it.
Yes.
Right. So I'm wondering if having done this job and worked alongside Scott or Zach, if people in your mind stood out to you that you thought they would be good people to feature on this show.
Yeah, I mean, so we generally know everybody. I mean, it's like an extended family. We know everybody, and you know, over the years, we've learned to see who would be good and who would not be good on television. And that we're very different characters on the show, and it's been good to kind of see those characters grow before the show, so we could put the best characters in it.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Scott is very different than Zach, and Zach is very different from me.
I think you and I are very different too.
Yeah, I mean,
might look similar. You've got the ginger beard thing going on.
Yeah, you got the nice scruff
I'm
going.
I'm 6 minutes older. Yeah, we are different.
Yeah, we are different. You know,
are you surprised at how? Well, maybe not actually, but Scott, I think everyone that I've talked to here, first of all, was so excited about this show because, you know, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of my coworkers on the phone and everyone else, and so they were very excited to put face to names.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it seems like Scott comes across as like the antagonist, kind of. Did you think that was how it would be?
We honestly didn't know how it was going to play out in the long run. Yeah. I mean, Scott is who Scott is.
Yeah.
I mean, he is Scott.
We all play ourselves, don't we?
Yeah.
There's no acting in it. It is these are the characters that you see. So, but Scott's always, you know, we get along with all of them, but Scott.
He's good for TV, we'll leave it there.
So you feel as though, in general, the people that, like, when you're watching the show, it is very true to life.
Absolutely.
You would say.
Yeah, that's something we wanted from a production standpoint, is let's show these characters as they really are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's not saying a bad thing or a good thing. It's
yeah.
who they are.
Just it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. What do you feel makes a good news story to you? Because I know from working in news that certain things will sell. And I know in watching the show, it was really, really fascinating for me to watch how you guys say, you know, oh, this is the money shot right here. And because, like, I work on the internet side, so I know when I see certain video, I'll immediately recognize that as well. But I'm curious, when you go onto a scene, what are some things that, like, that you know will make a good news story?
So when you get on scene, I think what you really look for is the action shot first. Anything that, you know, if it's a fire, you go for flames coming out the window, the fireman running around, anything action-wise. You know, and I'm sure you know some stories are visually led, others are the story itself. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have to weigh up everything. If we go to a kidnapping story and all we do is get crime scene tape, that's still going to sell. That's a story.
Yeah.
Whereas if we, you know, if we go to a fire and it's not a big fire, but we've got flames, that's going to sell. But I think, you know, the emotion, whatever pulls on the emotional strings of the audience, and you know, we do try and get dramatic footage, but we also shoot cat rescues and mm-hmm. feel good stories and things like
bunny
that.
Rescues
and the bunny rescues. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's you know, it really depends, but the good story is you know, what the audience wants to see.
Did it take you guys a while to get a good feel for that?
It did. I think to begin with, we may have annoyed the stations a little bit because we were feeding, when I say feeding, we were sending the stations 20, 25 minutes of footage.
Half an hour of just one frame of window with fire coming out. We just let the camera roll.
So you weren't necessarily getting different angles or...
Yeah, to begin with, right, we were sending the same shot for 30, like, we it's definitely a learning experience. And now we've managed to kind of know what you guys edit, and we do it ourselves as much as we can.
Yeah, and for the sake of people who don't know, you typically put together your editing B-roll, like a couple different shots. How long is a video that you do send?
We try to do between like 2 and 5 minutes. I mean, it's nothing more than that, really. As long as
five minutes has to be the story of the night.
Yeah,
you wouldn't want 5 minutes of a car overturned into a fire hydrant.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll edit that down into 10-second segments and string it all together and.
Yeah.
And send it out.
I'm curious if like the prevalence of the internet and how news stations rely, on Facebook video and stuff has changed the way that your job works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the social media, really has taken a big bite out of what we do. And, the stations will generally try and get content for free.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much, if for a member of the public to shoot something on their cell phone. If we're going to a fire, for example, and all we get is smoke, somebody with a cell phone gets flames, we're not going to be able to sell our smoke footage. Stations are going to take it off social media. And these members of the public go, yeah, great, put my name on TV, that's fine, but that's actually killing the business. So we've had to change the way we work and go after this social media ourselves. So if we see people posting content online, we'll quickly either call them or contact them and say, listen, we'll give you cash, take it down, and then we sell that on behalf of them.
So basically you buy it from them. And
yeah,
that's not something that you guys touch on in the show, is it?
Trade secrets,
yeah. But just the existence of that, because that is a huge thing that I didn't even think about until this moment.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, I've done it in the last couple of weeks. I've got footage.
I've seen the money going out of the bank account.
Howard's just spinning in the dough stacks.
Exactly.
So there's one, I actually wrote this down. I took a lot of notes, by the way. I don't always take notes, but because I watch every episode and there were so many things that I was like, oh, I got to remember to talk to them about this. But there's one part where Zach from On Scene says he's shooting a fatal car crash. There's a driver that I think ran into a telephone pole and ends up dying. And he says, it's as cinematically beautiful as we can make this. He seems to have a certain philosophy, I think, when he goes to certain like tragic situations. And that line kind of stuck out to me. And I'm wondering, as far as watching this, as a viewer, there's totally... I'm wondering how you guys wrestle with the difference between the moral implications of the job. So on one hand, you're witnessing someone's last moments of life, obviously, sometimes, not always. This is your family business. You have families to feed. Like, this is what you do. So you got to get the money shot. You got to make money. You got to get the video and whatever. But on the other hand, humans, you have empathy. I'm wondering just in general, especially since this show has come out, how reaction that you've gotten and like how you guys just generally talk about that topic.
That's a good question. We're able to separate what we're doing at the scene. It's almost like looking life through the lens. If you look through the lens, it looks almost like you're watching a documentary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, we understand that people are hurt or people are dying, and that's a horrendous thing. I mean, we absolutely feel for that. I mean, we've experienced things like that with our personal lives, and it's not good. I mean, we don't make that happen. We're there to document it.
I wouldn't say there's anything cinematic about it. We're journalists. We're doing a job. Yes, we want to shoot it well. But as far as anything cinematic, I wouldn't state that.
You wouldn't concur with Zach?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that, there's a way to frame your shot and make it look good. I mean, right now, the competition, like if I'm shooting against Zach or Scott, obviously you're going to try and make it look pleasing. I mean, regardless of the of the story itself. You're going to try and make it look good.
Yeah. So have there been any situations where, because, okay, downstairs, for example, I was just talking to one of our producers about how you guys are coming in and how, from the news perspective, a story isn't necessarily a story unless, it sounds really bad to say, but unless someone died. Or because so many things happen in LA that you have to almost be a little bit blunt about certain topics. I'm wondering, though, in general, if there's been any situations that you've filmed that have kind of stuck with you.
For me, certainly, is the crash that I caught on tape. That affected me hands down the most out of everything that I've ever shot. But we, you know, we do witness a lot.
Anything, I would say anything with kids. I mean, since becoming a father, any a crash with a car seat, you think, I mean, instantly, I mean, I have goose pimples now thinking about it. I've seen crashes with car seats in the back, and your first thing was, the first thing is my mind, please tell me that kid is fine. I mean, that's changed. I mean, just becoming a father has made me view things differently.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think I think you do become hardened to what you see, but what still affects me, and I know Howard as well, is the emotion that you see on scene. So if you're shooting a crash and then, you know, the family members turn up and they're collapsing on the floor crying, and, you know, I'm not going to put a camera in their face. You know, we draw the line at that.
Some people do, but that's going over.
You've got to, you know, you don't want to aggravate the situation at all. And I know, I try and put myself in that position. It's like, you know what, if that was a member of my family, I wouldn't want a camera stuck in my face. So, but it's, yeah, it certain things are harder to see than others.
Yeah. When, in the first episode, when you pulled the man out of the burning vehicle on, was that the 110 freeway?
The 110, yeah.
Wow. Do you drive on that freeway a lot? Like, do you think about it every time you drive by there now?
I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, I rarely drive down there at the moment, but I do.
In the show, it seems as though you had some post-traumatic stress from it, to where maybe you took a break from stringing. I don't know if you were, you know, working in other ways, doing other things, but do you feel as though, like, it's been, what, about a year almost? If it happened on New Year's Day, it's been about a year. How do you feel about it now?
If I think too much about it, it's still emotional.
Yeah.
You know, just the whole thing. I think once I'd got the guy out of the car and the realization of what just happened, the adrenaline wore off and the shock set in. And, you know, seeing the show now certainly made me relive that situation. And it was tough to deal with, really. I did take some time off. I kept getting reminded of what I did because I was awarded the, you know, commendation from the Highway Patrol.
And you're so humble about it too.
Well, I really don't think that I did anything spectacular. I truly don't. You know, I'd like to think that other people would have helped and put their cameras down and helped out.
I have a question about if your car stalls, maybe you've like sort of learned more about this since that's happened, but if your car stalls on the freeway, is the safest thing to do is just to stay in the car? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's at least have some protection around you.
I mean,
this was worst case scenario.
Because
the lights went, he got hit twice before. He got blacked out. He was sort of straddling the carpool lane and the fast lane. And it was a dark patch of freeway. So that's worst case scenario. I mean, he was a sitting duck at that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I think the show made it appear that I sat on the side of the freeway for a long time, but I wasn't. In reality, that was a few minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there wasn't anything I could have done. We've seen people running across freeways and get hit and killed. We've seen victims in car crashes try and run across the freeway after a crash and get hit and killed. So we shouldn't underestimate the severity of that.
Yeah.
That incident.
Totally.
It was, there really wasn't a huge amount of things I could have done.
Yeah.
You know, I would have put myself in grave danger. I had a cameraman in the car. You know, there were things that I had to think about. But then once the car got hit, I think you can see I just dropped my camera. I put my jacket on, my flashlight, got my fire extinguisher, ran across. Even that point, you still have to evaluate the whole scene. Yeah, am I going to get myself killed?
Yeah, I mean, you still did run across the freeway.
Yeah, the traffic had slowed down a bit at that point. You know, people were stopping and things like that. So at that point, I made the decision to go across, and I didn't know if anybody was in the car. So when you see me smash the window and I look in with my flashlight, I can see the guy unconscious, slumped under his steering wheel. So then it was game on. Yeah.
And also my thought is, even if you... So his car died, I'm assuming. The lights went out, whatever. Even if you were on the side of the freeway with flashers on or anything, that would be distracting because police were coming. Isn't that right? Like, there was...
Highway Patrol were already en route. There were multiple calls for it. You could see them in the background. They were actually coming off of the freeway to come back around.
Yeah.
So they slow the traffic down. And, I mean, they took a few minutes to get there.
Yeah.
But it's... suicidal to if I would have stopped my car behind his car, suicidal.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to think this is not just a normal weekend. This was New Year's Eve. And most nights we go out, we call in drunk drivers.
Oh, this wasn't even the night of New Year's Day. This was New Year's Eve.
Well, this was technically New Year's Day.
Yeah.
So it's 3
around
New
then.
Year's Day. Yeah. So we see a lot of drunk drivers. And even with previous crashes with Highway Patrol blocking lanes, they get hit by drunk drivers all the time.
2 weeks ago. A Highway Patrol officer injured in a crash.
That actually just happened this morning on the 405.
I was getting messages about that, yeah.
West LA.
Yeah. She knows more than you do.
I was asleep.
I should be a stringer.
Exactly, you want a job.
Yeah, are you hiring? Or are you joining Loud Labs? I don't know.
Nah.
Cliffhanger.
Who knows?
So this also leads to you received an award from the California Highway Patrol, and when you on the show you thank them for doing what they do. And also I think in one of the episodes police officers come up to you in the car just to say hi.
Yes.
Does that happen a lot? I mean, how can you talk a little bit about your relationship with law enforcement, emergency responders?
Yeah, it does happen a lot. Since the show's come out, it happens a lot more. We were expecting that. But even prior to the show, we have a good working relationship with law enforcement and fire departments. I mean, more often than not, we give them evidence footage. We show up to court for evidence, and we have such a respect for them. And I think it's a mutual respect, especially with our company. We have a lot of contacts in law enforcement and fire department, and hopefully it's a mutual respect.
Yeah. No, it really depends on the individual person you're shooting, cop, fireman. You know, a lot of firemen love to see themselves in front of the camera, so they don't mind. What we don't do is get in the way.
Yeah.
You know, that causes problems, and we don't want to do that. But generally, we have a great relationship with the police and the fire department.
That also leads me to, when other companies do get in the way, does that make your job more difficult? Because Scott seems to do that. Or at least in the show, I've noticed that people have different philosophies in how they approach a scene. And it seems like everyone behaves differently.
Yeah, it also depends on the officers too. I mean, we might show up on scene and we might get an officer that doesn't know the rules and regulations of where and you know, the access the press can get.
Gotcha. So he may be just saying, back up, you can't be here when you can.
And that happens to us, and we are allowed to be there, and then it's up to the individual officer. But we've all had situations where we feel like we're in the way when we're actually not. But I think other companies, they might handle things differently than we do, but...
They do. And I think, when you arrive on scene, you've got to think, is this going to be an active investigation? Is it going to be a fatal shooting, for example? You can't just walk in before the crime scene tapes up and go, oh, sorry, I didn't realize. You've got to be mindful of that.
Right.
But there was, when we first started doing this, you remember that time when it was you that got on scene first of something and got kicked out?
Yeah.
Then I turned up.
And
the cop was like, I've just told you to get out of the scene. And I'm like, what are you talking about? She was like, I'm going to arrest you.
That was my twin brother, I swear.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, okay, right.
Well, so I had to go over. I remember that. That was years ago.
That was funny.
One thing that's shocking that I don't know if maybe this is what your families think about a lot and your friends, but You guys are constantly going to the most dangerous situations, I think. That was like a big takeaway for me watching this show, and something I hadn't even thought about really until watching the show, because I've seen all your footage like working here, but like the car chases and you shooting the bear. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though you're so close to a bear, and yeah. you're just like, all right, let's do it. We're getting the shot. Do you guys bring... I'm curious, do you wear body armor ever? I mean, I know you had a taser at some point. What kind of protection do you have?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. I do have a taser in the car for personal protection. We're allowed to have those. I also do have body armor. It has media written all across it. That I will wear if I know I'm heading to a story, whether it's an active shooter or if it's a police chase with a wanted felon who's known to carry a weapon, that kind of thing. I do think to myself when I'm putting it on, is this worth it? But I do wear the body armor, especially as my wife's now seen the show. I wear it all the time.
But yeah, no, you've got to take care of yourself because you've got responsibilities. And my wife actually, she struggled to watch the first couple of episodes because I don't think, even though I told her about what happened, she couldn't visualize the crash scene. And when she could see that and how it affected me, that really... was tough for her to see.
Yeah.
But you do, you know, we're trying to get, you know, cover the best stories in the best possible way. And that puts us in danger. It really does.
Yeah.
But it's like my wife says to me, she'll never stop me doing it. And she trusts me to be responsible. It's like saying to somebody, bungee jumping is dangerous. I don't want you to do that. But it's like nobody can take this passion away from us. And I think, you know, how the same.
Yeah, my wife, she used to be in the Air Force. So she knows the adrenaline rush. She knows. And she used to be a firefighter too. So she's...
Really?
As much as I can see. Last night, for example, we're trying to put our kid down and a fire comes out around the corner from me. So I hand my kid off and say, I've got to go.
That's terrible.
I know, that's
pretty
bad.
That is terrible. But, you've got to get you.
But I can... You know, but my wife takes my kid and she puts him down. And that's tough for me to do. But she understands too, the passion I have for it.
That's terrible. Do you leave him on the side of the road?
Here, son. Just hang out here on the curb.
Actually, my son has gone to a fire with me, and he's like, he's got his own scanner.
The five-year-old?
Yeah.
Oh, he probably loves it.
He loves it.
The police codes.
Knows the police codes. He knows when he's like, Daddy, structure fire, and I don't want him doing it.
Yeah,
don't
do this.
I think it'll be a totally different industry by the time he grows up, but yeah, it's got to be mindful that you've got children and family and that.
Yeah, and social media.
Yeah. Sucks.
Yeah. A bit off topic, but that makes me nervous. Kids now, social media. I'm like, oh, it's out there. Once things are out there, it's out there. I do want to say the moment that you guys go to in San Luis Obispo, the memorial for that stringer, that honestly really touched me because I hope that everyone watches it can have the same reaction because I feel like the whole show, you guys are so competitive. You know what I mean? And it's just, you're constantly like trying to get there first and race each other and speeding down the freeway and whatever. But then seeing you guys standing there with Zach, I thought that was really touching.
That was a tough segment to film. I mean, regardless of filming, we would have gone anyway.
Yeah.
We knew of this guy, SLO Stringer. We knew of him. I'd actually personally never met him, but followed him on Twitter. We knew he was a really, really liked, humble guy up in San Luis Obispo and loved dearly.
He had more followers on social media than we did, and he'd been going for just a couple of years.
Yeah,
and
so he was a lovely guy. And yeah, like you said, as we're all competition, but at the same time, it's like we're all extended family. We never want to film one of our competitors in any way. But that was tough. Because just seeing his parents too, it just goes through your mind, like, what if my mum was standing here, or if my parents were standing here? It was awful.
Yeah.
It was really, really emotional time.
It really brings it home when, you think of the danger that we put ourselves into, and, it could happen to any one of us, and it brings it home.
Yeah, we don't know the circumstances of the crash or anything, but it's definitely, it made me slow down. Made me be definitely more careful on the roads and turn around in some situations.
Mm-hmm. Was doing the Netflix show in general made you view what you do differently, or how has your opinion of what you do changed since going through this experience? Because I'm sure that because Netflix is a huge platform. Mm-hmm. So many people see it. Maybe you've gotten comments to you guys, but you know, like how has your opinion changed of what you do?
I mean, we've always done what we do and we love what we do. It's, you know, it's just now given us a platform to,
yeah,
to let viewers see that. We are expecting negative comments. We are expecting positive comments. We have both. We have a lot of both. But in the end of the day, we're telling people it's what we do. We don't cause news to happen. We're there to document it. Right, the show covered us doing what we do. It's not dramatized in any way. It's us doing our job.
Yeah.
So it's
from a production standpoint, how much, like, I was watching too the cameras, like with Netflix having to have cameras shoot you guys shooting, like logistically that's a lot, right? I mean, how much of it was, because obviously reality shows, reality in general, you have to have some bit of planning to have cameras, you know, here or there, but there's so many times where I'm like, wow, that's a lot of planning that goes into this. Even like the part where you guys meet up and talk, mm-hmm. would you say that normally does happen, or would, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, you know, all of the crews are very professional. You know, they were literally fly on the walls.
Yeah.
You know, it flies on the wall. They covered everything that we did, and we've done it so many times before with different documentaries, et cetera, et cetera. And so, I mean, it's half the time I didn't even know they were there.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
I mean,
that's a good cameraman.
Yeah, yeah, we had cameras all over the cars and you know, inside the back windows and that.
When you pull up at, you know, stoplights and things like that, where people going, "What's that on the front?" You know, it's like,
oh yeah,
it's like, oh, that's when you remember
Netflix.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Got somebody in the back.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That also brings me to, you guys did some type of advising for Nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ride along. Someone did a ride along. Jake Gyllenhaal or someone in production with the movie.
Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal did a ride along with me.
How was that exciting?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I've seen the guy in obviously tons and tons of movies and respected the guy as an actor. The same with Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Took him out as well. And it was nerve-wracking.
Was it?
It really was nerve-wracking, because not only do I have myself to think about, I have these guys, the director and Jake Gyllenhaal in the back of the car, and the DP, director of photography, you know, Oscar winners, and it's like,
right.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to be careful, because, I mean, at that point,
did
I think...
Did you get starstruck?
Yeah, I did get starstruck. And super nice guys, and I just wanted to make sure I didn't put them in danger. I mean, there was things I didn't go to.
On purpose.
I know Jake has done other movies, playing a cop. What was that movie he did? He played a...
yeah, I know what you mean.
Come on, he played a cop. So I know he's done a lot of stuff with the LAPD, done behind-the-scenes stuff with them and rode with them, but it's still, like, do I take him into the, you know, the housing projects and film a shooting just so we can see it? It's like really nerve-wracking. I think at one point I figured out all of their combined net worths and think that's sitting in my back seat.
This is right in my car right now.
It's like I would have gone and signed a liability waiver or something like that.
Yeah.
Not liable for you.
Yeah, it was pretty nerve-wracking.
And
yeah.
Just the fact that you know that he's studying you.
Really, by looking at me, like
making notes.
Just taking his actor notes.
Yeah, he super nice guy. Very, very focused. Bill Paxton, too. Bill Paxton was amazing at directions. Like I've said, he knows L.A. like the back of his hand, like we do, and when I was out with him, there was a police chase, and he was saying, "Go right here, go over there, turn left, and go through there." I was like,
"Really?
Okay, you're super."
You offered him a job in the end of the day.
Yeah, so you want a job? He loved it. He really loved it, and we got the passing shot of a pursuit, meaning the pursuit came past us, and we were outside the car high fiving. I mean, it was unreal.
Yeah, and you were like, "Jake, this is the real deal right here."
It was good fun.
What did you guys think of Nightcrawler? I mean, I'm just curious if like. Because I don't know if a lot of the world even knew that there are freelance video journalists out there until that movie came out. Maybe they did. I don't know.
No, they didn't. I mean, there's a certain niche market of people, the type of person that knows what we do. But Nightcrawler certainly brought our profession to the public. And literally the day that came out, we started seeing people on the street with video cameras. And like,
oh,
it was like, you have no idea what you're doing. You're going to get yourself shot.
Yeah.
Or killed in a crash. Yeah, the so many, what we do is not something you can just pick up overnight. learning frequencies, like what frequencies to listen to, learning the police codes.
Listening to a scanner is an art in itself.
Listening to five at the same time is
even worse. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's you got to pick and choose. You got to have one ear on one frequency and the other ear. And then you got people talking to you. It's not a profession you can just pick up overnight. But Nightcrawler certainly did bring it, bring our profession to mainstream public.
Yeah. And probably people thinking, are you like that? Are you doing that?
People have asked me if I've dragged a body around to get a better shot.
Yeah, I mean, we've been called quite a few names.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of people who hate what we do.
Yeah.
I feel like that's, you kind of have to have tough skin, though. I mean, in showing up to these scenes and sometimes being kicked out, you can't be here, whatever. I don't know. Just in general, you guys seem, it's part of the job.
It has to go over your head. I mean, yeah, when was it? A couple of weeks ago, I was on a shooting, I think, in Eagle Rock, and some guy was trying to throw me down the street. This was a member of the public, just because I was filming on his street, and the LAPD had to come and intervene. But you have to let things go over your head. If you let things bother you, it will bring you down.
Mm. Yeah.
You've got to have eyes in the back of your head. I mean, I've had my camera smashed, stolen. I've had my tripod kicked over. Remember that time we were chased by gang members?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's bad.
And even filming this brush fire recently, the Thomas fire, I was up there and I was filming a guy with a hose on top of his roof trying to save his house. He did. He turned around to me and called me all kinds of things, which I'm not going to say. It's like, hello. Okay, I mean, vicious
wow.
things. It's like, I don't even know you. And that did get to me because he was just being...
Did you go in his house and...
Yeah, I went into my house filming his Nightcrawler stuff. But you have to let things go over your head, otherwise you get too wrapped up in it, and it makes you
go mad
or blow up.
Oh, for sure. I also like how in one part Zach says, and people here can relate to this on so many levels. Anyone in news, that also when it comes to scanners, you can't react to every single thing. And like, do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When you first hear the call, or else you'd just be going after everything.
You'd just be driving around like I mean, we hear so much stuff. You have to pick and choose what you go to.
Yeah.
Like a lot of structure fires come out all the time.
Yeah.
And like you said, if you want to go to one, or if you go to every single thing, you'll be doing 300 miles a night.
Yeah.
And that just eats into your profit margins. But
yeah, I was also reading on Reddit. Someone said about the show, is there really that much that happens every night in LA? And I would like you guys to speak to that, because I have my opinions. I think it does.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. Since we've been seeing in here, there's pretty much, I'd probably say there's been one shooting.
Yeah. There's a structure fire on Figueroa in downtown.
Yeah. It's
wait, is that coming up on your Apple Watch?
Yeah.
It's,
you guys are losing money by the minute.
Yeah. Can we get on with this?
Yeah. So, well, I got to go. See you.
Stuff happens all the time. And it's like for me, and I'm pretty sure it's like this for Howard as well, it's like gambling. You switch off your scanner and it's like, could I be missing the next big thing?
Yeah.
And some nights, weekends are busier, but there's always something happening.
There's no other city, I mean, maybe Chicago, that I would imagine in the US that would be comparable to here. It is just nuts.
Oakland, maybe.
Oakland, yeah. And it's not like New York City. I know New York City has stringers, but it's not like LA. You have wide open freeways, you can get everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a really good city to do what we do.
Do they have...
There's a brush fire on the 710.
Are you guys going to stop over there on the way out of here? Could you do this in London?
No. I think access would be a difficult issue. I think access is limited to...
As far as like you guys filming on certain scenes.
I mean, just the traffic alone and, there's... It's just difficult to get around London.
Yeah.
So you need a bike. Yeah, you need a bike. I think you'd be able to do it. But
can you imagine you guys on your bike with your tripod and your...
When we were 6 years old, yeah.
But I think the market there too. I mean, you have BBC, you have ITV, you have a couple of stations. You don't have the kind of...
But even then, it's like it's a different market. You can shoot a lot of things here that they wouldn't either play in the UK or they wouldn't... Like things that we shoot here, dead bodies in cars and things like that, even if it's a body under a blanket, there's certain stations here that don't touch that stuff.
Right.
The UK is very careful about what they... It's, it seems to me that the UK is very... it's a new European news, and unless it's a bigger incident, like a multiple shooting or something like that, that there's just it just wouldn't be the market for it,
I think. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, the brush fire here has made English news, but if as far as something in England, just no market for it.
Have your parents seen anything that you've shot on international news?
The rabbit rescue.
Oh, they saw that?
Yeah, it's been all over the place. They even had an interview with the rabbit rescuer on our, I think it's our version of Good Morning America.
But yeah. England.
They had that. So my parents seen that. I've got texts from friends I haven't spoken to in years. Hey, man, is that yours? That's like, yeah, from around the world. People in Australia that know us. And it's, that rabbit thing was crazy.
All right. Get it.
Crazy.
Oh yeah, you're the lucky one. Yeah, he's the lucky one.
I am the
lucky
one.
We've got this internal competition where it's like there's one time where Howard had gone out. I think you were with Mark. It's that Leimert Park shooting, remember that?
Yeah.
And I'd gone to bed for whatever reason. I'd gone to bed and I had to get up early. And I remember switching the TV on when I was making my breakfast.
This is when we lived together.
Yeah. And this was what, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
And I remember thinking the first thing I heard, I think it was Fox, actually.
Fox, yeah.
Yeah, the first thing was the reporter on scene of this shooting incident, and he said, and the cameraman had to duck for his life, and I'm like, that's going to be Howard. And it was.
It was me.
It was. I was gutted.
And Mark was there, too.
Yeah, Mark was there. But we have that sort of internal thing is whenever we're on a, you know, covering a police chase, and, you know, I think you can see the frustration come across in the show, but, you know, if Howard gets a passing shot, it's like, oh, you know, I've got to get, you know, we've got to get one up on each other.
It is so, I mean, yeah, we have this internal drive to beat each other. I mean, that's just part of being a twin, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, we've always had the, you know, the drive to beat each other. But I am so lucky. Like that, the bunny rescue. I'm filming the fire. The guy rescues a bunny worldwide. I mean, funny enough, that's actually been the most successful piece of footage I've ever shot in 20 years.
A guy rescuing a bunny out of a fire.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Did the bunny live?
He did. He took the bunny to a pet clinic.
There's pictures of it online.
Yeah, there's pictures. I had the rabbit had some burnt ears, but it's fine. It's going to be fine.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, and that was just, I mean, a heartwarming moment amidst all this tragedy and the loss. And
yeah.
It was just something different.
That probably is why it did so well, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, you can only film flames on a brush fire so many times, and that's just something completely different that I just happened to luck out on.
I liked when you said that I could be at the grocery store and there would be something like a shooting, a bank robbery next door.
Honestly, it's uncommon. Yeah. I could be walking in the park and there'll be somebody bitten by a rattlesnake around the corner or something. It's unbelievable. Just stay away from
Austin's
me,
just sick of it.
That's why I have no phones.
In
the last 15 years, the only time I can think I was that lucky is when I came out of a supermarket and I saw a news helicopter slowly coming overhead and I was like, what's that? Then I started seeing tweets about this slow speed chase. So I literally dropped my shopping cart full of stuff next to my car, grabbed my camera, and it was some guy protesting. Remember that guy in the Mustang?
A green Mustang, yeah.
Yeah, so he was driving. Yeah, he was driving so slowly that I went up to the car and started to interview him and got a jaywalking ticket. But anyway.
You got a jaywalking ticket?
Yeah, I've never.
Jaywalking isn't a thing in England, right?
No.
It's not
they
just
laugh
here.
At that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a $200 ticket.
$200?
Yeah,
$200. Wow.
The thing that annoyed me most is it took 15 minutes to give me the ticket. I couldn't even
see. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's silly thing to do anyway.
Well, that was funny. The LAPD guy that gave me a ticket saw me 2 weeks later sitting in a parking lot waiting for something. Hey, man, yeah, I was the one that gave you a ticket. It's like, you didn't give me a ticket. That was my twin brother. Don't lie to me.
That's funny.
Do you guys talk about work like at Christmas? Or, I mean, because you guys are all in the same thing. Like,
we try not to. It's always a topic of conversation.
Yeah.
We enjoy it.
Wherever we go, whoever we're going out to dinner with, we're always the topic of conversation.
I'm not helping. But
the quiet, reserved English guys, venturing out into the deep Los Angeles.
Before you guys go, I also saw that Chrissy Teigen was watching and you invited her for a ride-along. Did she respond?
She did initially. And then, obviously, I told my wife about the tweet, tweeting with Chrissy Teigen.
But then she saw how Howard drives.
Yeah, then she's back. joking. And then my wife pointed out the fact she's actually pregnant. So that will not be happening. I mean, if she wants to, fine, just wait until you get born. And, but she replied, we had a little bit of banter back and forth, but that was pretty...
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Crazy. I mean, just the fact that I'm sure more people watch the show because of that.
Oh, the amount of retweets and likes and everything that got.
Yeah.
So if anybody else is listening and wants to go for a ride-along, you just have to let us
know. Would you go for a ride-along?
Could I?
Yeah.
I 100% would.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll take out the baby seats out the back of the car and fit you in.
What nights do you guys go out? Like, you obviously can't work 7 days a week. What is, like, typically?
It depends. If news happens, we go out.
Oh.
But generally, weekends are busier. So, I mean...
Friday, Saturday nights.
Friday and Saturday nights are the busiest.
I could do Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night.
I could only do a weekend night.
Yeah.
You'll see some stuff. You know, it gets busier, like, at the end of the month when people get their paychecks and they go out and blow on drinks and stuff. And like, it's interesting.
Like, in the middle of the month, like, 15th, 16th, things get a bit crazy.
Mm. Full moon. Yeah. When it gets hotter, yeah, the statistics the line goes up.
What do they say when Mercury's in retrograde? Even though I don't believe that.
No, it's funny. Like between 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock, you get your DUI drivers and bad crashes, and then I think between 3 and 4, you get your domestics because people get home and argue because they've been out all night. Mm. I mean, there is actually these statistics.
There's a law that's being considered of moving back the drinking aid or the drinking hours at last call hours in bars in California until 4 a.m. I'm curious if that would extend your work hours.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
It would
probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But then, you know, stations have their deadlines.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And of course, by, you know, 4 a.m. or so, there's stations have their own reporters and photographers.
Yeah. And that's exactly the reason why we work at night is because stations don't have anybody. So we have to kind of get our stuff in by 3:30 at the latest.
Yeah.
So you guys can edit and write the stories and do all that. So
interesting. All right. Well,
Friday night.
Let's wrap this up. I know you guys have,
Structure fires
to go to. Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. Subscribe to our show and please rate and review. We're on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Olympic and Bundy. Next on the show, do you follow any Insta-famous dogs or cats? You know, that French bulldog with 4 million followers on Instagram and making his owner lots of money by the day, post by post, just by sitting there and looking cute. Well, you'll hear from a woman who manages a pet influencer agency. It's like a modeling agency, but for animals with a big social media following. And I might say an owner who's very business and social media savvy. So, look forward to that. I'm Kelly Taylor, and thanks again for listening.